Hello, this is Anil Kumar from Back to the Bible radio broadcast. As we continue our current series called Life Lessons from David, the Man Who Would Be the King, Dr. Neufeld speaks about a critical episode in the battle between David and Goliath. So let's now turn to 1 Samuel chapter 17 verses 31 to 54 for today's message on learning to fight in your own armor.
We have noted that there is a parallel between Pharaoh and Goliath and between Moses and David. God had raised up Pharaoh and allowed him to become as powerful as he was, so that when God devastated him, he would showcase to the whole earth how mighty and how glorious the God of heaven actually is. Listen to what David tells Goliath on the battlefield. "This day the Lord will deliver you into my hand, and I will strike you down and cut off your head. And I will give the dead bodies of the host of the Philistines this day to the birds of the air and to the wild beasts of the earth, that," and now listen to this, "that all the earth may know that there is a God in Israel, and all this assembly may know that the Lord saves not with a sword and spear, for the battle is the Lord, and he will give you into our hand." Now, and so I hope you can see that this is not the story of the little guy overcoming the huge corporate giant, but rather this is the story of God's determination to declare his glory, that he alone determines the rise and fall of all, and that in the end of the day, the earth will be filled with the glory of the Lord. Now, we've noticed three movements in the story. The first is David's calling. He is the anointed shepherd of God's people. Second, David's tool for battle is the very means by which God has been training him. And third, David's confidence is in the promise God has made that he will defend the honor of his name. Now let's move to the fourth movement, David's actual victory over Goliath. The actual battle itself must have lasted only a very short period of time. It seems like all the drama of this account was in the build-up to the fight. The fight itself is almost anticlimactic. There are only two verses describing the actual conflict. They're verses 48 and 49. "When the Philistine arose and came and drew near to meet David, David ran quickly toward the battle line to meet the Philistine. And David put his hand in his bag and took out a stone and slung it and struck the Philistine on his forehead. The stone sank into his forehead and he fell to the ground." We can almost imagine Goliath, big and slow, partially protected by his shield bearer, moving forward. In contrast, David is fast. He reaches into his bag, pulls out that tennis ball-sized stone, places it into the sling, whirls it over his head as he moves in. He has practiced this matter hundreds of times before. The rock comes out at a speed of perhaps over 200 kilometers an hour, a ferocious speed that blasts its way past the helmet and crushes the skull of Goliath. He's probably not dead by the time he hits the ground. By the description of what follows, he must have been completely incapacitated and in death throes, writhing on the ground. The battle is over almost as soon as it has begun. What happens next emphasizes that short battle. The inspired writer simply says, "There was no sword in David's hand when he accomplished that." But David is not done. He runs over to the corpse of Goliath and draws his sword out of the sheath. Clearly, Goliath did not even have time to unsheath his own sword. This battle happened so fast. But David takes the sword, a sword he will later keep, and uses it to thrust the final death blow into the body of the man, and then uses the same sword to cut off his head. You know, more than one person reading this account finds it gruesome. But just to understand, there was never any doubt that this battle was unto death. Had David not delivered the death blow, neither the Philistine nor the Israelites would have believed in the finality of the battle. With that comes the final movement of our story. The battle symbolizes the final victory of God. Let's continue to follow the story. In consequence of this victory, several things occur. First, the Philistines, in shock, flee from the battle line. For 40 days, they have stood before the battle line of Israel, proud and confident, shouting their taunts and blaspheming the name of their God. And now, in horror and disbelief, they run, hoping they can make it back to their fortified cities before they are overtaken and killed. And second, as shocked as the Philistines are, Israel realizes what God has done, and with a shout, they surge over the dry wadi, inflicting heavy losses on the Philistines and plundering their camp. But David at this moment does something we might find curious. instead of joining in the victory over the Philistines, verse 54 says, "And David took the head of the Philistine and brought it to Jerusalem, but he put his armor in his tent." Because we're so familiar with Jerusalem, we might think nothing of this. After all, isn't Jerusalem the capital of Israel? Well, no, it's not. At this time, Jerusalem was a Jebusite stronghold in Israel. The entire drama of this account is that Israel failed to do what God had commanded. They had not driven out the inhabitants of the land, and the Philistines to the west, and Jerusalem, right in the heart of the territory of Judah, was controlled by people who openly worshiped idols and cast aspersions on the living God. And by taking the head of Goliath to Jerusalem, David was proclaiming the Lord's victory over all of Israel. As their anointed king, he would proclaim God's rule over the entire land. And by the way, as a necessary aside, I think this also explains why it is that David took 5 stones and placed them into his shepherd's bag as he entered the battle arena against Goliath. Perhaps you might find this too symbolic, but do consider that the Philistines were governed by 5 royal cities, all of which were highly fortified. I think David was pronouncing a stone of victory over all 5 cities. He was proclaiming the victory of the Lord his God over this entire land promised by God to the children of Abraham. And he was rejoicing over this fact that God would do it miraculously. For those of us who find the accounts of warfare and of the killing to be difficult, let me take you to the New Testament. In Ephesians 6:12, Paul writes, "For we do not wrestle against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the authorities, against the cosmic powers over this present darkness, against the spiritual forces of evil in heavenly places." From that passage and comparing it to the account of David and Goliath, let me draw several conclusions. First, notice that Paul says, "For believers, our battle is not with flesh and blood, but with the evil powers that stand behind them." We should notice that Jesus was able to accomplish that which David could never accomplish. Jesus set demons to flight in terror. David only routed foreign armies. But we might say that the warfare that David faced was only a type or a symbol of the ancient warfare that has always plagued the human race. We have an ancient enemy, Satan, who seeks our undoing. He inspires wars and hatred and murder and lies and slander and unbearable suffering in this earth. Jesus defeated Satan in a great battle on the cross, and now Satan's ability to win the war against the human race has been lost, for Christ has triumphed over him in his cross. The battles David fought only prefigure the great and grand battle for this world. But because God cannot be defeated, Christ has triumphed. David's triumph symbolizes the great triumph in the end of the day. Second, please also notice that like David, we are in a genuine battle. No, we're not to fight physical battles as David did, but we are to fight the battles for truth of the gospel and for the souls of men and women. And that brings me back to the theme of this series. If we want to live lives that matter, or to live lives that make an impact for the kingdom, we will do well to remember that we will be called upon to fight evil. And we will need to fight it, as David did, with the assurance that we wage war in the name of the Lord our God, whose glory fills the heavens and the earth. Some of us have the mistaken notion that we can discover God's purposes for our lives and then after that have fullness and meaning and wonderful peace devoid of conflict. But if you want to live for God, you will face foes on every side. And you can only be victorious if you trust fully in your God. Unless we see that the battle is the Lord and that our weapons cannot win this fight, we cannot prevail. Many will be horrified to know that when we live with purpose, we are indeed entering into a warfare. But we are. But if we learn to fight in the armor that God has provided, described in Ephesians 6, we will prevail. The battle, as David would say, is the Lord's, and our Lord conquers over all.
John, this is a great series, and one of the things you brought out, I think, is this whole idea of David being a shepherd and what that meant relative to his battle. He was not out there as a conqueror. He was out there as a shepherd. Now, what does that mean?
You know, it's interesting because I had that when I was reading Psalm 78, and I began to see how Asaph, who, by the way, was appointed as a worship leader by David. So if there's a man that knew David, it would have been Asaph. And he builds that connection between David's work before he was the king as a shepherd to the kind of king that he became. And we really do see how God never wastes the experiences that David has, doesn't waste our experiences either. And he shapes the kind of king that David will later become. And that does tell us something about how our God rules over us. He protects us from all evil. I mean, it's interesting that David would say, even though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, you know, he's convinced that God's rod and his shepherd's tools will protect him in the final day. So what David learned and what God does is really one and the same. That's what's built into the story, and it's really precious, I think.
Living as a faithful Christian isn't a calling that will ever be easy. But when we understand the reality that God has conquered the battle for us, we can have confidence that He will see us through every time. Indeed, we wage a spiritual battle today and every day. But the question to ask is not whether we can win it, but do we trust in God during these moments? Are we concerned with His glory and not our own? I pray that this message has been deeply encouraging for you, whatever you're facing today. Please join us again for another great lesson from the life of David, the man after God's own heart. Back to the Bible, leading people into a dynamic relationship with God. Thanks for joining us today. At Back to the Bible, it's our primary goal to teach God's Word with clarity and confidence. We believe it is only through doing so that lives are changed for eternity. And every week, we continue to receive encouraging feedback like the following. We are learning so much through the teaching of Dr. Neufeld. The Bible is brought to life, and we look forward each day to learning more. If you have been blessed by this ministry, maybe you would take time to share with us. Email us at info@backtothebible.in or give us a call at 949244-0070. That is 949244-0070.